For more information on the Lynch series, visit our website at moviegeeksunited.net/Lynch series.
It's too bad he couldn't visit that old Wizard of Oz and get some good advice.
Too bad we all can't, baby.
Welcome to the Lynch series, an ongoing collection of interviews designed to celebrate and explore the films of David Lynch. In this episode, we speak with Ben Barinholtz. Mr. Barinholtz created the concept of the Midnight Movie, and he was an early champion of David Lynch and his film Eraserhead.
How did it come to you that you could... That there was a place for specialty films and midnight movies?
Well, I had I opened the Elgin Theater in 1968, and actually I was quite broke at the time, and I went to the Filmmakers Co-op and convinced them to put in Chelsea Girls on the second run for a month, and I didn't have any money to get started, really, so... They gave me $48. we ran Chelsea Girls for a month, and then the co-op pulled out, and I started programming it myself. So,
right. So they say that you are the inventor of midnight movies?
I think that has to be clarified a little bit, is that I think... There were movies that played at midnight in the 20s. I think the what was innovative in any sense in what I did, it was the first time that a film was actually launched at midnight as
right.
opposed to without it playing anywhere else, and that was El Topo. And it was more of a financial thing. It came about with because of the struggles of... running a theater without money, and I was trying to utilize as much of the time as I could was one element. And the other thing is that they also noticed that particularly Broadway, off-Broadway shows would open, and in their previews they would do sell-out business, and then as soon as... They got the review in the New York Times, and it was bad, and it closed the next day. So we were always trying to find an alternative way of reaching a narrow audience economically.
Right.
So out of that, when Alan Douglas came along after he bought El Topo, and he had about $10,000 to open, I just told him, you know. That's not going to work. You're going to get killed on that film. Your reviews are not going to be good. So why don't you let me try opening it at midnight and without advertising?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, within a few weeks, we were selling out a 600-seat theater 7 nights a week. Actually, Friday and Saturday, it went on at 1 in the morning.
Oh, goodness.
And
wow.
Ran for 6 months, and then... John Lennon and Yoko Ono were there a few times, and they wound up buying the film, and Alan Klein, who was their accountant, or who was manager accountant, and they opened it on Broadway, I think.
Mm.
Huge signs, Alan Klein presents, and big advertising campaign. I think it lasted about 3 days. I think they were so embarrassed that they pulled it out of circulation for a long time.
Well, you started your own distribution company, Libra Films, in 75, was it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years later, you came across Eraserhead. I would think the release on Eraserhead said 77.
Yeah. Well, actually, the person should really receive credit is because it did play, I think, at the in L.A. at the AFI. And it was a film named John Quinn that called me, and he said, you've got to see this film. And when they sent me the print, and I was in the middle of the screening, and I just told Fred Baker, who was working for me at that time, just get him on the phone, I want this. And he thought I was out of my bird.
What potential did you see in it?
It's not a question. I'm not an academic. I never had an agenda or anything. So even in my Elgin days, the reason I did get so many different things in there, because if it looked good or if it touched me, and I also had a lot of kids working for me that were helpful. And
right.
I would just play anything since I'm not. I just love film. I wasn't interested in I didn't have an agenda of any kind or an aesthetic that I tried to follow.
Right. Did you have a plan? Did you have a plan to get these movies recognized? Because I understand.
Well, I think one of the elements of distribution, particularly on difficult films, is that you don't really go in with a plan. You let the film in itself will really tell you how to distribute it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question of economics and how you get to a specific audience, particularly a difficult film. And certainly Eraserhead, one of my associates at that time, after he saw the film, told me that I was out of my mind and it wouldn't make a dime. It paid my rent for 10 years.
Oh, goodness. How long did it run? I think it had a 2-year run or something.
Well, Eraserhead actually. I didn't have the Elgin at that time. I was I'd left that, and I opened it at the Cinema Village. I think there was an audience of 25. And first night, second night was 24. I told David it was working, and he looked at me as if I was. Out of my, I understood. I mean, there was one element to understanding of the scene Eraserhead, as I told David at the time, he was just about 10 years ahead of his time,
right?
And that it was going to take a lot of work and patience to do it. So the release was very, very slow. There were even times in the first year where I would not let certain exhibitors play it. You know, I'd get a call from Dallas or Kansas City or whatever, and I would say, no, it's too early. Wait till next year. Word of mouth has to catch up with it. So it wasn't that huge runaway success. It just was much slower in developing.
It was a slow build, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What was the general consensus among those who watched it? What did they think of it?
They didn't know what to make of it. I never told David that half the audience the first 2 days were friends of mine. They weren't even all a paying audience. I couldn't get it reviewed. I couldn't get any critics to see it. Which I happened to find, I think the only write-up I got on it was in the Village Eye, which doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or it existed for a blink of that eye. I think Gary Indiana interviewed David, and that was its only... slowly it sort of became the film to see, the thing to do.
Yeah, it was definitely buzzed about. I know that, and it was so influential. I think Francis Coppola, I had read, saw it and loved it, and obviously Mel Brooks saw it and was very taken by it. Did you have any interaction with these industry people that were seeing it?
No, not at all, as I try to limit my interaction with industry people to this day.
Wise man.
I don't know if it's wisdom or it's lunacy. Maybe a bit of both. But I actually think it had a greater influence in the UK because it played in a theatrical screen on the Hill for many years, even after, because I had a 10-year agreement on the film, and I actually drew up a contract and flew out to L.A., met with David's lawyers. It was quite a big law firm, and of course they were doing it pro bono for David, and I put the contract in front of them, and they didn't even look at it. They just told David to sign it. He said, any idiot that's going to want to take this film, let him have it.
Uh-huh.
So I did get worldwide rights on it at that time.
But so obviously you had some...
UK was really very important in terms of how many filmmakers it influenced there.
Yeah. You obviously had some communication with Lynch during this time. What kind of...
Well, to the extent that you could communicate with David. since then, David has become much more articulate. David did stay with me... I don't remember the exact time. It may have been a month or two as we were launching or opening the film. And he would go to... his wife Mary was with him, and he would go to the McDonald's, and they'd both be asleep by 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, wow.
So the... I don't remember having a really serious conversation with him. We did have it, but it wasn't as a lot of since he was a painter. I mean, his natural bent was very tactile. I think that's sort of what attracted me to the film. Certain elements to it that were very, very tactile and painterly, and it just moved me very much in that way. And now, you know. I think I once asked, because somebody had asked me about, this film reminds me of the German expressionist cinema. And I asked David, had you ever seen any of those films? And he said, no. And I said, well, don't.
I want to talk about some other high points of your career. And another favorite filmmaker of all of ours on the show, filmmakers, are the Coen brothers. And I was wondering, how did your relationship with them begin?
Well, actually, they came to me in trying to get Blood Simple financed originally. And I really couldn't help them. But I saw there was something different. There was some spark there. And there was really very little I could do for them at that time because they were just trying to raise the money to do it. And they went back to Minneapolis and raised the money on their own. And then by that time, I had formed a partnership with Circle Releasing, the Pettis Brothers in Washington. And it was shown and actually shown by Skouras, who was handling it, and they showed it in Cannes, and I was there, and I didn't even see it because they thought they really had a horror film, and no one really saw it there, and it was quite a time after Cannes that Jim Jacks, who was working for us at that time, he saw it again in Los Angeles, and he called me and said, well, yeah, that's the film, you know, because I was telling him about these guys, of course. So we wound up picking it up for distribution and then produced their next three films, which was Raising Arizona, Miller's Crossing, and Barton Fink.
Oh, goodness, wow.
Wow.